Max Howard, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
You're in Georgia, I understand.
I am in Atlanta, Georgia, a northern suburb.
You know, Louisville tried to follow in Atlanta's footsteps back when I was with the Chamber in around 1970 or something, and did a lot of advertising, but I don't think much came of it, because Atlanta was pretty hot back then.
Yes, well, there's plenty of room for Louisville. Bring it on up or down.
Oh, I was talking with Brother Giles a while ago, and he said he had been going through your resume that's on the internet site.
Yes.
And we both agreed that you've done lots and lots of things, and it goes on forever and ever and ever.
Yes, it does.
Tell us what you've been up to.
I'll go on forever and ever. what have I been up to? Well, I've been up to trying to put into practice everything I was taught at St. Joe Prep, and that's the truth.
Yes.
Extraordinary experience to come from Pike County, Kentucky, way up in them Nar Hills,
yes,
and be immersed full body into a conservative Catholic boys' school in the middle of the bluegrass.
How did you find your way to the prep?
Actually, my parents were determined that all three of we children would go away from Pike County Public Schools to get an education that really would prepare us to go to university. Pike County Schools at that time, this is 1956, at that time we could only point to Mississippi as being in worse shape than we. And in my school, it was a consolidated school for that particular area of the county, the high school had no laboratory sciences, no foreign languages, no advanced mathematics. I think Algebra 1 was as far as you could go in that school. There was no sport other than basketball. There was no yearbook, no school newspaper. There were no forensics, as in speech, drama, debate. This is not said in ridicule. It's just what was at the time and what could be done at the time. And so they looked around to see where in the world could they send this child, having sent my brother and sister to a school that was actually closing that particular year because it was expanding. It was associated with a junior college there in Pikeville, and it was expanding to a senior college, so no more academy, which is where I would have attended. And my father was at the bank in town in Pikeville. We lived 30 miles further east. I mean, way back in there.
You're way up in the hills.
Oh, my goodness, yes. And he inquired, and an officer of the bank literally took him aside and in hushed tones inquired if he would be averse to sending his son to a Catholic school. And my father allowed us out. No, he wasn't opposed to that idea. And so the man said, well, there is this place called St. Joe Prep in Bardstown. So that's how I discovered it.
Uh-oh.
And that was really an accurate entrance into out of a culture that did not comprehend the culture I was about to enter.
No, well, St. Joe Prep certainly was a whole lot different then, and what they offered us and taught us and gave us.
Woody, I've thought so many times in my life that a mere 100 years before we entered that school in what would have been 1856, a mere 100 years, and the closer we get to 70, the more we realize that's not a very long time,
no.
Actually. But a mere 100 years before we entered St. Joe Prep, the education we were about to receive would not have been available to any but the nobility and the landed gentry and the wealthy merchant class. We got a true classical education, nothing fancy, but it was every aspect of a classical education, from the playing fields to the debating platform to the science lab to the language arts to all of the rest of it. It was extraordinary to have been given that education in our time, I think.
It was. It certainly was. Do you recall, of the brothers, did you have a favorite?
I did not have a favorite. There were many of the brothers who were very influential in my life, two of the most prominent being Brother Mario, who was the speech and debate instructor,
yes,
and of course Brother Sean, who was the drama coach.
Mm-hmm.
And between the two of them, they pretty much put me on the path I have followed ever since.
And that path was what?
Theater, professional theater. I went to Ohio University and got a BFA in theater arts, spent 2 years in the Army, and then fortuitously began a career in the professional theater, which come this September will number 44 in years.
Whoa, yes. Really?
Extraordinary to have been in the theater in any capacity whatever for that period of time in a business. I work now also with many, many corporate clients as a speaker and trainer, another offshoot of my theater skills and experience. And it is extraordinary to me to realize just how improbable it would be for me to be able to do what I did, what I have done, to have made a life in the theater, because the odds against it are staggering. And when I talk to my corporate clients about, you think you have challenges in your life, let me tell you about one of the most competitive, change-driven, stress-filled, financially insecure, and emotionally unstable businesses in the world. And in your world, Mr. Corporate American, in your world, success for you is 6 or 7 figures annually, and the kind of security which are visited to very few humans. In the world of the theater, survival is a triumph.
Oh, it is, yes.
And to be able to make that point in terms of human capacities, what is required to stay the course when you don't get 6 and 7 figures and all of the adulation and attention, says something about the potentiality of human beings. And I'm always speaking to corporate America about taking measures which will help them realize the potentiality of their workforce.
Is that what they want?
They, it's a very broad audience, mm-hmm. And they are changing in character significantly in our time.
Is that right? How so?
Well, business as we have done it is simply not going to be adequate in the future. The world is changing, our economy is changing, and we, the United States of America, are about to learn some very harsh lessons. We think we're learning them now, but we have no notion of how the world has changed around us, and it will be visited upon us after we are through this prolonged slump. The new normal will look nothing like the normal that we have known in the past, primarily because we now, as a nation, as an economy, as a society, as a culture, will be faced with a world that has changed while we have not, and we will not be calling the tunes anymore. We will be dancing with everybody else. And with that comes a whole new need to manage human capital in a different way, a whole different approach to what is the relationship that we have in it with the world community. What kind of business are we really in? We have outsourced, downsized, and eliminated so many of our basic industries, and we have, in a sense, painted ourselves into a corner where we are left to do what we have so blithely thought we could do effortlessly, which is to be creative, to be the inventors, to be the new discoverers of patterns and the implementation of knowledge and all of that. Now we really have to deliver, because that's all that's left to us. That requires a new approach to a new kind of American worker. And it requires right brain skills, which we have shortchanged since the Industrial Revolution in favor of left brain thinking, which is linear. Right brain thinking is far more circuitous. But that right brain thinking makes us empathetic, makes us available to new experiences, makes us better listeners, and you know, it just goes on forever. It is a cultural paradigm shift. So I say to my friends and colleagues, I personally, having been raised in the theater, I am so far behind the times, I am now on the cutting edge. And it's true. It's literally true, because the skills that the artist in America or in the world has always embraced, because they are essential to creating art, now become the skills which will be essential for creating business and industry.
How is the school systems going to... Or what are they going to have to do?
They're struggling. They're struggling now, and we're still in the throes of the belief that if you test, you'll know what needs to be done. Well, you do have to test, but the backside of that always has been, and we learned this at St. Joe when we were preparing to take our ACT tests and get college board exams and so on. If you hold the test as the first priority, then you will force everyone in the process to teach to the test, which means you are not teaching human beings to be educated citizens. You are teaching children to have the right answers to pass the test, because your funding, your credibility, your personal advancement, your success all depend on successfully passing the test. The brothers had no such mandate. Their first task was to produce worthy citizens who could function successfully in the world. And that is why we all received as much of the humanities as we did of the sciences.
Mm-hmm. I think they helped us learn how to think, didn't they?
Absolutely.
And to process.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And to think in ways which, by the way, were not universally held, because we were always taught that there is something greater than ourselves to be served. It isn't, you know, we are not, what we do and who we are is not the end-all be-all in the history of the world, which makes us, I think, made us way more receptive to new ideas and new approaches. And although, in a sense, that classical education prepared us for a world that was not ready for us, the world is now in desperate need of us,
mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, that kind of schooling is becoming more and more difficult to come by.
No, I think when I was retained and hired by various organizations and clients because I was outside the box, thinking outside the box,
oh, yes.
And I always knew there was a better way to do things.
Oh, yes.
Now, our classmates, I'm looking at your comments on the website. John Patera in the cage. What was the cage? Remind me of that.
In the gymnasium. It's the cage is where all of the equipment was kept, because John was the equipment manager. a man who, let me put it this way, he was basketball dribbling challenged. Let's just put it that way. But he was a heck of an organizer, and he loved hanging out with the athletes, and was really good at it. And the sight of John Patera behind the screen, the heavy wire screen that was the cage where all of that was done, is just a sight that sticks indelibly in my mind.
Now, you also mentioned Charlie Hayden.
Yes, running down the field after a kickoff in a football game. Talk about hustle. Charlie was the epitome of that. You could feel the effort from the back of the bleachers watching that man run and played the game that way. That was really inspirational, because we were all told, do your best, work hard, don't be afraid to hit. Charlie wasn't. He took off with all he had and threw himself into the first likely suspect. It was an impressive sight.
Brother Giles was reminding me a while ago and told me some things I didn't know about Charlie. You're talking about Coach Perry?
Oh, yes.
And he was sort of laid back in coaching, and he didn't have the motivational wherewithal in the game situation, so he would send Charlie Hayden in to motivate the team and to talk to the team, and I can't wait to ask Charlie later today what he said.
That would be, yes, well, please, by all means, publish that, because I would like to know before we meet him again at the end of June.
And I spoke with Kenny Greenwald last night.
Oh, wonderful.
You mentioned his amazing car model.
Yes, in our senior year, he was part of, I think it was, I don't know if it was Chrysler or GM, had a contest of a design contest that was available to students around the country, and Kenny came in with a prototype, a design for a prototype that it really was futuristic. It had more of the keeping of what you would see in BMW sports car of our day, or a more advanced version of a Corvette, really, really handsome.
Really?
Yeah, it was quite a piece of work, and beautifully executed. I mean, it was a beautifully crafted model, about, I don't know, 1 inch to 1 foot, I guess, because it was
really
about 12 inches long, as I recall. It was a substantial model, beautiful piece of work. That and the impressive telescope, which he manufactured as part of his entry into the science fair that we were all obligated to participate in.
What did you do for the fair? Do you recall?
Oh, it was dreadful. I was a Johnny-come-lately, couldn't think of anything that interested me. Science was not, though I really enjoyed the chemistry course. Brother Hugo was a terrific teacher. I came late to the dance, and so it was, of the available projects that were left, one was, through the process of distillation, to be able to identify the components in a compound, and it could be any kind of compound, and for whatever reason, it was suggested that I should do, of all things, cough syrup, which meant going into the laboratory and boiling this stuff and trying to capture the various elements as they came off at different temperatures. Well, it was a boondoggle, to put it kindly. And I don't recall the grade. It was not a good grade. It was not a failing grade because I'd put in the hours. But you know, tiny percentages of some obscure compound in this tiny bottle, 4 ounce bottle of cough syrup, wasn't the biggest playing field in the world, especially for a kid who didn't know what he was doing, really. And now all we do
is look on the back, don't we?
Yes, now we all have to do is look on the back and find out that really was arsenic I was trying to distill.
the science fair, remember The As You Were?
Oh, yes.
Our yearbook?
Oh, yes.
And I remember a picture of me in there making ozone.
Oh, my God.
I made ozone. I don't know where that came from, but it's one of the things you'll remember.
And how did you do that? Was it a huge electrical arc?
I don't remember. We'll have to look at the book. I just don't know. It probably exploded at some point.
No doubt.
I had more explosions than anybody in that course.
That explains the Dugan Memorial hallway right off of the science lab over the gymnasium, I suppose.
You were in the service.
Yes, 2 years in the Army.
Yeah. Did you travel anywhere interesting?
Without intentionally insulting Indianapolis, Indiana, no, I did not. I spent my entire service life at Fort Benjamin Harrison.
Did you?
Well, not my entire. My infantry training happened in Pennsylvania, actually, at an ancient military installation used primarily for the training of ROTC students, of which I was one, but was sent to Officers Basic School at Fort Benjamin Harrison because it was the training school for two Army training schools, the Finance Corps and the Adjutant General Corps, and I was assigned to the AG Corps, and went there, did my training, and then was assigned to the service school and spent my whole 2 years there.
I took a course at Benjamin Harrison. It was information officers class.
Oh, yes, of course. That's when the Department of Defense Information School relocated there.
Okay.
That means it's very likely you were there at the same time I was.
Probably so.
We could not have bumped into one another with such a small group.
One of the NCOs that was teaching us there ended up being my NCO at Vietnam.
Is that?
At Army headquarters in the Command Information Department.
I'll be darned.
He kept us together.
All
kept
world,
us going
yes,
in the right
sergeant
direction.
Run the Army. You learn to appreciate your staff when you get into that situation.
Yeah, I could be as creative as I wanted, but the staff had to make it happen.
Yes, exactly.
That was amazing.
And had to know the parameters, and those gentlemen did. Those men.
We did things. One of the things we did, and they said, you can't possibly do this. Marijuana was sort of an issue over there.
Oh, yes.
And the Army they separated marijuana over here and then drugs over here. So there were two different things. And doing the research for a poster I had to publish, which was psychedelic, by the way, the only thing that I could say was quoting American Medical Association saying marijuana may be hazardous or dangerous to your health or something like that. I doubt if it had any impact on anyone.
No, because if you're in combat, you could care less, and if you're living in the jungle, there are many more things that provide a much more imminent danger to your health than smoking marijuana.
Yes.
But you have to do what you have to do.
In the theater,
yes.
Did you have a favorite play or part that you did?
No, I did not. The reason I was in repertory theater, as opposed to going to New York to work in the New York theater or going to Los Angeles to work in the film community,
mm-hmm.
I chose to work in repertory theater because I wanted to do the literature, the dramatic literature. That meant classical training, mm-hmm. which I received, and it also meant classical literature. So this is all of the people that schoolboys hate to encounter, George Bernard Shaw and William Shakespeare and
sure.
all of those folks. But this was the literature that interested me. So I spent my career, essentially, working in major American cities as a resident actor in repertory theater companies. And my thrill was to be able to do it all insofar as my age, range, and talents would allow. So I played character parts primarily and did everything. comedy, drama, musical, contemporary, classic, Asian theater, French theater, English theater, certainly, and did not have a genre or did not have a character type that I particularly liked, because being a character man, you really do get to play the most interesting parts. Heroes win, but the character men stir it up, and those are the parts that are fun to play. Not necessarily the bad guys, but I played plenty of those too. So there was no particular character type that I enjoyed, nor any particular genre of theater.
You were in Cincinnati for a number of years and worked with Taft.
Yes, that was not a theater assignment. That was a television assignment.
Yes.
And did a program called Max B. Nimble, as in Jack B. Nimble, only the B in Max's name was an initial followed by a B, so mm-hmm. it was Max B. Nimble. And it was a television program for young audiences, and we were in production for approximately 2 years and then stayed in syndication for almost 8, as a matter of fact, all over the United States. Great experience.
You got a number of Emmys, too, didn't you?
Yes, the program won, I think, 6 is the number. The writing staff, the particular directing episode, the cinematographer for the program, and I myself was presented with one for an on-air performance. They did not present Emmys for the body of work, but rather instead for a particular episode that we did. That way, if you do an Emmy to the program, everybody on the program gets an Emmy, and
sure.
the program has been awarded, but this they chose instead to enter us on a particular episode, which fortunately was well received.
Tell us, Max, the program that you all are instituting to raise some funds for the brothers?
Yes. This is, speaking of Charlie Hayden, this was his, it just slowly evolved, a great idea to raise funds for the brothers, the Xaverian Brothers Retirement Fund. We thought, what better way to celebrate a 50th anniversary? Let me explain, first of all, who we is. Who we are. Yes, it actually just, each of our, this is our third our reunion, and in all cases, there has been a call from Bob Thornburg to Don Parrish to Max Howard to who else was standing close by, and it's been four of us in each of these years who've just gotten the trouble started. And so as the four of us, in this case, including Pat Coleman, so Charlie and Pat and Bob and Don Parrish and myself, as we were talking about, well, first of all, how do we account for everybody, and this is our 50th, and it is a real watershed event, and so forth, how could we appropriately celebrate this? We thought, what better way than to express our gratitude to the men who taught us? And since St. Joe, per se, no longer exists, we can't do anything for St. Joe Prep, per se, but we certainly can recognize the brothers. And so we had been talking about some article of a hat, a shirt, or something to commemorate this particular anniversary, and we thought, why not create something that would have wider appeal than just the class? And so we came up with the theme of Tip Your Hat to St. Joe Prep, and Charlie had a wonderful hat designed that says St. Joe over a block J on the front, and across the back it says emblazoned proudly, undefeated since 1968. Which is extremely pleasing, I must say.
Yes.
And Charlie has arranged for this to be ongoing, and any Xaverian school can tap into the supplier who will facilitate all of this. And the idea is we purchase the hat, or for other classes and other schools, whatever they may wish to do. But in our case, we purchase a hat. It's $25. And after the cost of the cap, which escapes me at the moment, but the lion's share of that amount then goes directly to the retirement fund of the Xaverian Brothers. And it is our hope that we will not only be successful for our class and make a significant financial contribution, but that we can establish the template for this and have other of our classes, both those who graduated ahead of us and those after us, the 8 classes that graduated after us, to adopt the same program for each of their significant reunions. and to bring this to the attention of the other Vivarium schools who either are like St. Joe closed but still have an alumni association, and to the many Vivarium schools like St. X in Louisville and St. John's in Baltimore to get them in on this as well, so that it becomes a perpetual fundraiser. And the further hope is that in the case of Bardstown, because the prep was so prominent for so many years and because the Vivarians were so important in so many ways, they have trained the leadership of Bardstown, essentially.
I think so, too.
As a result, the city of Bardstown and the county of Nelson has been dramatically impacted by having some very well-prepared boys graduate to leadership positions in town, in business, in the community, in the government, in the culture of the city. And so this is a way to we hope, significantly gift the brothers and to express our thanks and to get the community involved.
I think they will. And Max, with that, we would like to say goodbye. We'll see you this weekend.
Yes, indeed.
Thank you very much.
A great pleasure, and my thanks to the Vivarium Brothers, and my thanks for an opportunity to say so publicly.
Yes, thank you so much.
My pleasure. Take care, my friend.
Bye, Max.
Bye.